Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We've been slow walking into the age of the electric car for years now. You've noticed the neighbor with the hybrid parked and plugged in the driveway. More designated parking and charging spots around town. And of course, those Teslas gliding through traffic. But this week, GM and Ford announced they are in the race to go all electric. And suddenly, the end of the age of the gas-powered car may be coming into view. Wow, this hour On Point, American automakers say they're going electric. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you believe it? Are you ready for it? Ready to say goodbye to the gas-powered automobile engine, the gas station? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Detroit is Joanne Muller, Detroit Bureau Chief and Auto Reporter for Forbes Magazine. Joanne, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you. So we're reading the headlines, Death of Gas and Diesel Begins, as GM announces plans for all-electric future. You were there as they said this is the future they're looking at, GM anyway. What's going on? How many models are they bringing out electric and why?
Well, what they announced this week is they are going to have 20 new all-electric vehicles by 2023, which is really only 5 years away.
Yeah.
The first two of them are coming in the next 18 months. But remember, they're already on the market with the very first affordable long-range electric vehicle, which is the Chevrolet Bolt EV. It goes about 238 miles on a charge, which is plenty for most people, and it's about $35,000.
And the 20 new models, that's just GM. Ford yesterday said, what, another dozen of its own?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, really what we're seeing here is the entire auto industry is shifting toward electrified vehicles. And, you know, it feels like we've been talking about this for 15 years.
Yes, it does.
But all of a sudden, and it's been very slow, but all of a sudden now, it's coming really fast. Volvo, Jaguar, BMW, Mercedes, Volkswagen, all these makers have said, we're going to electrified vehicles, and fast.
At the moment, it only accounts for a tiny, though, percent of cars sold in the United States. What is it, like 2%, something like that?
I think it's even maybe a little less. It depends on how you define electrified. So in the industry, electrified means everything from battery electrics, plug-in hybrids, hybrids, and fuel cells. When we talk, like the Chevrolet Bolt is a pure electric. That is a battery electric vehicle.
Okay.
That's where the energy comes from.
And they're going to go from that to what portion of the market? I mean, when you're at 1% and you're talking about an all-electric future, there's a gap there, Joanne. People may stare at it and say, wait, what?
Yeah. Well, this will take years, decades, I'm sure, right? But why is it happening now? The government in the United States, in California, in China, in Europe, everywhere, governments are concerned about energy security and about the environment and emissions. And so they're basically regulating that we must achieve certain targets. And so far, the auto industry has said the only way to do that is with pure electric vehicles or fuel cells.
Do we have Detroit and Donald Trump's Washington going in different directions now? Because they've been talking about cutting back the reductions in emissions that the Obama administration pushed into place. So, I mean, is Detroit going in some other direction from Washington right now?
Let's put it this way. Detroit is going to try to make money, and they want to sell cars around the world. And regardless of what the U.S. Government decides, they still want to be big players in China and elsewhere. And frankly, China already has twice as many electric vehicles on the road than the U.S. 40% of all the EVs that are in the world are in China right now. Now, still very small. It's only 1.5% of their market. But these regulations are basically forcing the hand of these car makers, and the customer will have to come along.
China has said they're going to ban the internal combustion engine.
Yeah, they've said that. We'll see whether that actually happens. But I do believe that, you know, 2030, 2040, 2050, there will be very few gasoline cars around.
Wow. Joanne Muller covers Detroit for Forbes magazine in the auto industry there. Joanne, great to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thank you, Tom.
Let's stick in Detroit. Sam Abuelsamid is with us right now, senior research analyst at Navigant Research, former automotive product development engineer himself at Ford, working on electronic control systems, columnist for Automotive Engineering magazine. Sam, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Do you believe it? Is this really happening? I mean, they're rolling out all these models, but we don't have the infrastructure for this necessarily in this country. American drivers have habits. You know, they want to go to a gas station, 5 minutes, you've got a full tank. Is this really where we're going now, Sam?
It's gonna get there eventually. You know, certainly, you know, you mentioned filling up quickly, you know, at a gas station in a few minutes. That's something we still can't really do with plug-in electric vehicles. But you know, we're getting closer to that. We're starting to see the deployment of higher power DC fast charging systems, both here in the U.S. and particularly in Europe and elsewhere. You know, right now, you know, you can go to a Tesla supercharger station or some of the other DC fast charging stations and add about between 50 and 100 miles of range in about half an hour to an EV. So that's a pretty good start. And within the next 10 years, we'll see much higher power stations, you know, where you'll be able to get, you know, roughly 150 to 200 miles in about 10 to 15 minutes or, and maybe even less than that. So we'll definitely get there, but it's going to require a significant amount of build out, and part of that's going to be helped, in fact, you know, ironically by Volkswagen because of their Dieselgate situation. They, as part of their settlement with the government, they committed to spending $2 billion on building out electric charging infrastructure here in the United States.
$2 billion to build charging stations in the United States by Volkswagen. That's a lot of charging stations, I guess.
Yeah, it's a pretty significant amount. I mean, right now, DC fast charging stations in the U.S., we've got about 1,100 of them. I think there's about between 50 and 60,000 what we call level two stations, 240-volt stations. So those are the slower ones that you find in most places. But there's the Tesla supercharger stations, which are also DC. There's about 800 of those. So, you know, it's going to require a significant increase, but it's coming along with the vehicles. So we're getting both the chicken and the egg starting to appear.
What about the cost of electric vehicles, Sam? It has been high. They've been subsidized by the government. The Trump administration has talked about ending those subsidies. Can they really flood the market when the costs have been, anyway, substantially higher than internal combustion engine cars?
There's been a lot of progress made. The biggest cost premium in an electric vehicle is the battery, the cost of the battery. And, you know, estimated that in the Bolt, the Chevy Bolt, that, you know, that batteries, you know, cost somewhere between $18,000 and $20,000.
Wow.
Maybe a little more. So, you know, about half the cost of the car.
Yeah.
Similarly for a Tesla. But those costs are coming down pretty rapidly at about 5 or 6% a year in some cases. So we're making a lot of progress there. So that'll help. And, you know, you've got companies like Nissan. With their new Leaf that's coming out later this year, you know, they're really focusing on the value proposition, trying to find the right balance between giving enough battery to give a decent range and keeping the cost at a reasonable price point.
What's really driving this, Sam? Is it China ultimately? I mean, they've laid down some big edicts, and they can do that there, and they are a huge part of the global automobile market. Is that what has driven GM and Ford this week to say, we're going?
China, Europe, and California are, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, are the three big drivers. You know, you've got a number of countries in Europe now that have proposed bans on traditional gas and diesel cars. It's important to keep in mind that, you know, while they're talking about getting rid of traditional cars, that doesn't necessarily mean getting rid of the engines entirely. What they want to have is at the very least mild hybrids across the fleet. So there's some degree of what Joanne referred to as electrification. So we have mild hybrids, strong hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and full electric vehicles. And then China, of course, you know, with their huge pollution problems in the cities that have been growing so rapidly, you know, because of the nature of the Chinese government and economy there, they the government there clearly has a lot more power to push forward electrification if they choose to do so. And California shows no signs of backing off either. There's now proposals from Governor Jerry Brown to ban internal combustion engine, new sales of internal combustion engines by 2040.
China, with its choking smog in the cities, wants to get those gas guzzlers out of the city, even if they still produce a tremendous amount of their electricity at the moment with coal. We'll talk about that. We'll get the full China picture before we're finished here. We've got some terms to define before we're finished: mild hybrids and strong hybrids. What about American oil companies? Do they believe this is happening, Sam, or are they going to, you know, dig in, resist? We know they have ways.
There's clear, you know, they like any big company, big entrenched companies, including the automakers, you know, they're constantly lobbying to try to protect their existing business. But they also recognize the reality that, you know, things are going to have to change. So we're seeing, you know, a lot of the oil companies investing pretty heavily in renewable energy resources, you know, investing in solar and in wind power. So, you know, clearly the bulk of their business for the foreseeable future is still going to be in petroleum and fossil fuels. And, you know, there's still other applications for those for fossil fuels or for petroleum, you know, making plastics and other materials. So that's not going to go away anytime soon. And you know, unlike some of the predictions of past decades, we're not in immediate danger of running out of oil and gas. But we're going to see a shift in where the energy we use for transportation comes from.
We're going to look at this, test the projection. We're seeing forecasts here, anything from 10% of new sales to be electric plug-in by 2040 to more than half globally by 2040. Sam Abuelsamid, please stand by there in Detroit. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Relationships are important. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and Blue Apron makes cooking together fun and easy. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. So join in, get the family together, and choose your meals each week. They come to your door with pre-measured ingredients so you can spend time with your family and not at the grocery store. With the simple instructions, everyone can help prepare the meal. There's no risk. Get your first 3 meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com/OP.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American automakers going pedal to the metal, they say, on electric cars, fuel cell, joining the global push to electric, and talking about the end of the internal combustion engine of cars as we've known them. GM and Ford both were making big announcements this week. China already saying it's going electric. Sam Abuelsamid is with us. He's senior research analyst at Navigant Research, joins us from Detroit. You can join us this hour as well. Can you picture pistons and cylinders being not the lords of the road anymore? Can you picture the infrastructure we'll need for an electric car fleet? And is all this now happening faster than you expected, at least rhetorically? The plans on the drawing board? Maybe you're already in an electric car. Tell us how that's going for you. Pam Fletcher joins us right now from Detroit. She is Executive Chief Engineer for Global Electric and Autonomous Vehicles at General Motors, GM. Wow, big position. Pam Fletcher, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
Are you really doing this? We associate Detroit with, you know, gasoline.
Absolutely. We are doing it, and it's not us talking about doing it. And, you know, think about the proof points we have. We've cracked the code on the affordable electric car with a Chevrolet Bolt EV. We lead the industry in plug-in vehicle sales. And so our announcement yesterday of GM sees a future that's all electric is, you know, just a continuation of what we frankly started many years ago.
You've got 20 new models coming out just in the next handful of years. Can you give us a sense of the range? What are these all like Nissan Leaf, little tiny cars? Are they like the Bolt? What's the range you're likely to present us with, Pam?
Yeah, great question. So first, when we talk about those 20 cars, we are talking about 20 fully electric cars. So I know in your last conversation, your last guest, we talked about a range of technologies.
Mm-hmm.
We're specifically talking about all electric vehicles. And, you know, as we look at our customers have a wide range of needs. And so we see those 20 vehicles, you know, fitting into a multitude of different segments to satisfy, you know, the wide-ranging needs of our customers.
Does that mean you'll have like full-size sedans ultimately, or within that five-year period?
We see the gamut. You know, certainly the heart of the market is already being talked about in the next future as crossovers and SUVs. So we see a big play there. And really, we showed to many of the journalists that cover the space on Monday our next generation propulsion system that will enable everything from sedans to SUVs. And so really it's all about the customer. We're laser focused on that. And I'm really excited as, you know, the future literally unfolds in front of us, transforming the industry.
You say it's all about the customer, Pam, but right now it's something like 1% of vehicles sold in this country are electric vehicles. So in what is it really the customer driving this?
Yeah, so if you look at the customers today of electric vehicles, of particularly our Chevrolet Volt and our Chevrolet Bolt EV, they are among the most satisfied in the industry. And so we know the possibilities there. You see trends that are happening. You see the trend that we've established around autonomous technology with having autonomous on top of electrified an electrified platform in a rideshare network. I mean, all these things really play together to lead the mobility transformation that's happening before us. So, you know, we see the future, and you can't start when it's already here. And we think we're well on our way.
Leanne writes to us on Facebook, Pam. She says, "I'd love to be able to afford one. So far, they have been more expensive. The government has subsidized purchase of electric vehicles. What do you see coming on the affordability front?"
Yeah, great question. And, you know, I just talked a minute ago about we see a multitude of solutions. When we talk about those 20-plus entries, all-electric entries by 2023, you know, we need to satisfy the multitude of customers we have. So whether it's your, you know, your social media question or anyone else, that's absolutely our intent.
To bring that down, do you have folks within GM who are like, no way, cars to me mean vroom, vroom, gas motors, I'm not interested in electric? Have you had pushback?
Well, I would say electric motors, you know, are really provide fun-to-drive vehicles. You know, you can't get maximum torque at zero speed from an internal combustion engine behind a step gear or in front of a step gear transmission. So I don't think performance is going to be the issue with electrics.
What about fuel cell? I mean, that's a different thing. You all have cooperated with Honda some on that. What's the fuel cell portion of the picture?
Yeah, great question. And so we have some tremendous work going on in the fuel cell arena, both commercial as well as looking at the retail space. In the commercial area, we have a number of demonstration vehicles ongoing with the military right now, where we can really provide some unique solutions to solve, you know, to solve very important scenarios for our country and for, you know, our soldiers that are out on the battlefield. So we're really proud of that and excited about the possibilities of a fuel cell there. And we also talked about our own first fuel cell retail application coming within the next 5 years. So fuel cell offers great opportunities, offers advantages in terms of duty cycle operation over some other applications. So definitely has its right place going forward.
Hydrogen fuel cell, watch that space as well. The autonomous vehicle future everybody's talking about now, where they'll be self-driving. What's the relationship, Pam, between that and the move toward electric vehicles? How do those go together?
Well, for General Motors, they go together in terms of solving a multitude of problems that the world is really trying to solve as we look at the big issues, the big trends that that people are facing. You know, the globalization or the urbanization of the globe, et cetera. So we have built our autonomous program, our first generation around the Chevrolet Bolt EV. We just, 10 days ago announced we are now building our third generation autonomous vehicle off the Chevrolet Bolt. That third generation, we've done all three generations in 14 months. And so, you know, we are moving at unprecedented speed. And the car that we introduced about 10 days ago, this third generation autonomous vehicle, is built on the manufacturing line at our assembly plant, the same assembly plant that builds our high-volume Bolt EV. The car contains all the redundancies required to have a safe autonomous vehicle deployed into a commercial environment. So we're super excited and proud of the work accomplished to date. More to come and more work to happen, but we've got more than more than a lot of good proof points and experience under our belt.
GM on the electric car fuel cell bandwagon now. Your colleague there, Mark Roos, saying General Motors believes in an all-electric future. Pam Fletcher is Executive Chief Engineer for Global Electric and Autonomous Vehicles at General Motors. Been with us from Detroit. Pam, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Tom. Great to talk to you.
Sam, please stand by. Michael Dunn joins us right now from San Diego, president of Dunn Automotive. It's a Hong Kong-based consulting and research firm focusing on China and the future of the automotive industry. Author of American Wheels, Chinese Roads, joins us from San Diego today. Mike Dunn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Is this for real? And if so, what's China's role in pushing the world in this direction?
Well, we Americans need to get our minds around a new reality, and that's China is number one. China already builds and sells almost two times as many vehicles as we do here in the United States.
Twice as many as the United States. Okay.
This year it'll be up around 30 million cars. And they also lead in electrics. 700,000 electrics this year, going to 2 million by 2020, and as many as 20 million by 2030. They're in the lead.
And so how does that relate to what we've seen out of General Motors and Ford this week, Mike?
It is safe to say that the moves we've seen by Ford and GM this week are exactly aligned with what China wants them to do. That is, China recently announced new quotas saying by 2019, 10% of your fleet, if you want to sell cars in China, 10% of your fleet must be electrified. That's either electric or hybrid or fuel cell. So their hand has really been forced a little bit, strongly encouraged, if you will, by the Chinese new policies to say, if you want to play in our market, you must build electrics here.
Can we back up for a second? Why is China so gung-ho on electric vehicles?
There's a little bit of history here, but three things. First of all, they want to not be dependent on the Middle East for oil. They see what America's experience with that has been.
Having to fight wars there, being in hip deep and all that.
That's right. Second thing, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, new, urban, wealthy, educated Chinese don't like bad air. They want their kids to breathe clean air. And the Chinese government said the way to get there is through electric vehicles. And third, and most important probably, is China sees electrics as an opportunity to lead in a technology, not follow. They're right there, shoulder to shoulder with the rest of the globe in terms of this new technology. And they see an opportunity to go ahead of the competing countries.
You mean the, let's say, Detroit had entrenched advantages with the internal combustion engine patents and all the rest that China couldn't get around, but in electric they see a more open frontier for them?
Exactly. We see already, for example, BYD, one Chinese automaker, is a major manufacturer of batteries, which are the heart of electric vehicles. The Chinese look around and say, hey, we have a real opportunity to be the tech leaders here. By the way, we are the largest market, and we'll have the likes of Mercedes, Volkswagen, Renault, Nissan, GM, Ford, all bringing their best technology here. Guess what? We'll be the central cluster for EV technology going forward.
Is Detroit ahead, behind, neck and neck? What's it look like right now?
On the tech front, Detroit is ahead. But on the market front, China is using its leverage to say, bring that same technology here to China. We'll have the bigger market sooner. And they're hoping that that alone gives them enough inertia to lead in electrics going forward.
So what about American automotive sales in China now? How big a portion of the market do American firms have there?
GM, Ford, and Chrysler are doing tremendously well in China. For example, a third of GM's global sales are now concentrated in China. Ford sells more than a million vehicles a year in China. And Chrysler, through its Jeep brand, is doubling sales this year from a smaller base. But they're all doing very well. China's important to them, and they're going to go along with these new Chinese policies on electrification, if only to keep steady and keep their profit flowing from the mainland.
Mike Dunn, standby in San Diego. Sam Abdelsamid there in Detroit. Maybe it's not American consumer tastes that are going to drive this anymore, Sam. The way Mike describes it, it doesn't sound like it. It sounds like what the Chinese want is what will drive.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely right. You know, both Chinese and Europe, and to some degree, the consumers in California. And you know, I think that's part of one of the things to keep in mind with the current review of the corporate average fuel economy standards. Is if the Trump administration decides to relax those standards a little bit or roll them back, one of the advantages that the automakers would have is that it would allow them – it would give them some flexibility to shift their marketing strategies and perhaps sell more of the SUVs and trucks that are so much more profitable for them in markets outside of California and some of the other states that follow the California zero-emission vehicle mandates, and use some of that that extra profit margin there to offset the cost of subsidizing the electric vehicles that people in California want to buy but maybe not can't necessarily afford. You know, you had the question from someone on Facebook earlier about not being able to afford EVs,
yeah.
and that's certainly a problem. But if they can sell higher margin vehicles in other parts of the country, then they can use that money to offset the subsidies that they might put to reduce the cost of the EVs in California and New York and New Jersey and the other states, and then sell more of those, get more of those vehicles into the marketplace at a more affordable price
point. So dirtier vehicles elsewhere so that California and China can have cleaner vehicles and they can retool. This is really interesting. We're talking about the big push in Detroit now for electric vehicles, China and others leading the way, kind of dictating the way. Mike Dunn, you know, there's been a lot out of the EPA since the Trump administration came to power, from President Trump himself, about we'll do it our way. I mean, does the U.S. have a choice about where its automotive industry goes now in terms of the balance of gasoline, fossil fuel fired, and electric or fuel cell?
You know, it's the American way to give the consumer the ultimate choice in what they want to drive. So I don't think that culture changes overnight. But what does change is that the automakers, in order to meet these new quotas in China, are really obligated to design, develop world-class electric vehicles. And while they're doing that, they'll say, well, to make sense of this, we need scale. And that means China plus. We're going to manufacture and build them for the China market, but where else can we sell them? So we'll see more and more marketing and promotion by U.S. automakers here in the United States to convince U.S. buyers that electrics are okay. Here in California, where I am today, I see lots of Teslas and Bolts on the road. I drive a Tesla myself. And I can say that there's a lot of comfort and with the charging stations, convenience that wasn't in place of just a few years ago.
Joe in Lexington, South Carolina. Joe, you're on the air. What's your question?
Oh, hi, Tom. Actually, more of a comment. I'm an engineer myself, and actually your guest from GM might be familiar with this. Back when I was a student in the early 2000s, I participated in the Challenge X program, which we converted a Chevy Equinox into a hybrid electric, and I've been a believer in an electric future since. So I currently drive a Nissan Leaf I purchased back in February, actually for $7,500 used.
Okay.
And that's my commuter car. But I think really the biggest challenge that electric vehicles have faced until recently was the battery technology. And I think now we're seeing technology catch up with the demand where we, you know, right now the lithium-ion batteries, which have been used since 2011 roughly, to where the inventor of the lithium-ion battery and now Toyota is on board with solid-state batteries, which are going to provide a much higher density, a lower cost, a better safety margin, and a more reliable vehicle. And so I see it going nowhere but electric. And to speak to infrastructure, it's already there. You got your power lines. You know, I can plug in my car to any 110-volt outlet. I can plug into a 220 as long as there's a connector. And the big challenge with that, at least, is the standardization of the charging ports. So, you know, really that's my comment is I just don't see it going anywhere but electric.
Sam, are the batteries up to the ambitions that everybody, China, California, now Detroit, have laid out?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly been a lot of progress made on battery technology in the last 20 years, and particularly in the last 5 to 10 years, especially in terms of driving down cost. and then and improving the energy density.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American automakers now going all in on electric cars. Big announcements this week from GM and Ford joining the global push to electric, talking about the end of the internal combustion engine, certainly as a norm of cars as we've known them in the rearview mirror. With us today is Sam Abuelsamid. He's with Navigant Research, joins us today from Detroit. Mike Dunn is with us from Dunn Automotive, Hong Kong-based consulting research firm, looks at China in its automotive industry. Big player now, biggest in the world when it comes to automotive markets. So they do have sway. You can join us this hour. Are you ready to ditch the internal combustion engine? Do you believe in this rapid rise of the electric car future that we're told is now coming, American automakers getting into it as well? Can you imagine feeling sheepish one day soon, ashamed to be gassing up at the pump like a smoker huddled behind the building? Lots of people writing in on this. Deirdre says, I'm driving all electric and I love it. I charge at home where I have solar panels on my roof. I am driving on sunshine. We've got throwback, a little nostalgia anticipated here as well. Nick says, I will miss the sound. Those old muscle cars sounded great, and the current set of cars are trying to match that. That said, Nick writes, I'm an environmentalist and consider this the right step forward. It may be time to sell my old Camaro. Here's a question for the two of you. Derek writes to us, I am your demographic for an electric car. I would love to be a customer for one, but living in an apartment with no set parking space, how am I supposed to charge overnight? Sam?
That is one of the fundamental issues with EVs. EVs, in a lot of ways, make the most sense for people that live in urban environments, but those are also the people that are most likely to live in an apartment where they may not have access to easy charging. And I think one of the ways that we're going to address that problem is with the move to autonomous shared mobility, which Pam alluded to earlier.
You're talking about self-driving cars. You just jump in and share them. It's sort of like a semi-private, semi-public transportation.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, personal point-to-point mass transit is the way I like to think of it. And you can have a spectrum of different types of vehicles for different rides. You can have smaller vehicles. If you're just going somewhere on your own, take a small little pod car, something like the GM Envy concept or the Google Fireflies that they were running for a while. Or if you have a group, you can have a larger vehicle like the Chrysler Pacifica vans that Waymo is using to test their autonomous driving system. So the shift towards ride hailing or subscription services with electric automated vehicles, I think, is going to be the key to really making electric vehicles accessible to the masses, especially in urban areas.
Mike Dunn, how's China dealing with this? I mean, they've got tons of urban dwellers, and we know the Chinese, too, they like their own car. They might share them, but they like their own as well. How do they deal with that charging problem when you don't have a driveway or a garage?
Most urban dwellers do live in apartments in China, as you say, and they love their cars. So Tesla has addressed this by moving their fast charging stations not on the highways between cities, but right inside cities, and that's worked very well for them since they.
But what
started
do you do?
It
still takes a while, doesn't it? You have to drop it off and go have coffee and come back. What do you do?
The fast charging can take anywhere from 10 minutes if you want to top up to 30 minutes for a full charge. So they would build that into their daily commute. Let's stop at the fast charging station. And once you're geared up to 240 miles, that's good for a couple days of city driving. Look for Tesla to duplicate this model here in the United States as they roll out the Model 3.
What does it look like? Charging stations, do they have a bunch of parking places there so lots of people can be charging at one location? How's it work, Mike?
Yeah. Typically, they're situated at a hotel or a shopping center, and there's about 12 to 15 separate independent stations, pumps. You pull up, you just plug in, and you walk away, as you say, get a cup of coffee, come back, and you're good to go.
Rich in Trumbull, Connecticut. Thanks for calling, Rich. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Hi. A little grist for the mill. How many billions do you think it would take to upgrade our power delivery system across the country? And, like, what's the net gain? And, if you're talking, like, now your dollars and then your dollars,
yep.
All these big projects always go, exponential in cost. And how can we put an ocean of energy through a straw? That's another thing. The grid will have to be, you know, upgraded.
Yeah.
And do we have to deal with another Enron possibly in the future and the expended batteries? What's the impact on the environment with them?
These are all great, Rich. Let me pick it up right there. And above all, this question of our infrastructure here in this country, Sam, is it up to it? I mean, that's a great phrase. An ocean of energy that would have to be drawn now through what was currently, kind of, you know, Rich says, a straw. What about the cost and practicality of that, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, certainly if you wanted to do it all through the traditional mechanism of our grid, it would require significant upgrades. And, I mean, the grid is going to require upgrades anyway. But increasingly we're seeing a lot of utilities looking at things like distributed energy resources where rather than centralized power stations, we're seeing much more of the energy generation being moved out to the edge of the grid. And, you know, with the particularly with the adoption of solar and wind, we're starting to get more and more of the energy generation being distributed around. So it's closer to where it's being used in many cases. So that will help. And then, you know, overall, I think just the change in how we're powering these vehicles, having more people with residential solar will help. You know, localized wind power, all that's going to help a lot.
We've got a comment here on Facebook, Mike, from Dot Lee. She says, I think Hurricane Harvey and Irma knocking out power grids for days will scare a lot of folks into not getting an EV car, not to mention the long drives to evacuate the area. You know, Mike, people may look and say, look, I understand a can of gas and an internal combustion engine. They will get me where I want to go, even in an emergency, even if the grid's out. What about that perspective?
Yeah, look for a transition where families will have one gas, one electric. They'll play with the electric on the weekends. They'll get used to the range limitations. And over time, grids will improve. Energy supply will improve. Not an overnight switch to electrics, but a gradual transition.
Sam in Cushing, Oklahoma. Sam, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, there's no free lunch. You're burning fossil fuels right now to make those wheels move. And if we convert to electric, you're still burning predominantly fossil fuels to make the electricity. So the carbon footprint remains probably about the same. So aren't we just really kidding ourselves?
Let us pick it up. It's a great question. I mean, when you look at the sources of an awful lot of our energy right now, certainly, and China's, for heaven's sake. I mean, Mike, I think I read that 80% of China's power comes from coal. So how do they see the advantage here? Because, I mean, if you're burning coal to feed an electric car, what is the advantage? Just moving the pollution around?
It is very much a case of moving the pollution around from the cities to the rural areas. And that works in China because the people with relative power vis-a-vis the government are the people who are educated and wealthy and live in the cities.
And they don't want to choke to death and all that smog we've seen.
That's right.
But still, the question stands there. First, for China, I mean, over time, are they making some kind of commitment to alternative fuels so it's not just fossil fuels burning somewhere else instead of out of the tailpipe?
That's right. Coal's a pragmatic choice today because it's abundant and cheap. But China is also investing very heavily in solar and wind power. And they see that as the ultimate solution. Start with a car, zero emissions coming out of the tailpipe, then back it up and go upstream to where the source of energy is and gradually move away from coal to solar and wind.
So over time. Donald in Medina, Ohio. Donald, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I believe there's going to be a huge social change in the way people use cars. I don't think in the future people will not own or drive cars because the self-driving autonomous cars will be coming into play.
Let me
just have a phone app.
Yeah, just say I need transportation, and a pod pulls over, and you hop in. Sam, you've talked about the sort of virtuous cycle here between the likely trend we're now seeing toward autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles. What's the connection, Sam? How do those feed on each other?
In a number of ways. First of all, an autonomous vehicle, because of all the sensors and compute power that's required on there, requires more electrical power from the vehicle than we can typically provide with current cars we have today that are running 12-volt electrical systems. So most of the – if you look at most of the autonomous vehicle development that's happening, it's happening on hybrid and battery electric vehicles because they have that electrical power available. And then if you – once you start to deploy those automated vehicles – because of the way that they can they'll be programmed to drive. They'll be programmed to drive in a much more smooth fashion than a lot of people typically drive, a lot less aggressive acceleration and deceleration.
Why would they be programmed that way?
For a couple of reasons. One is for efficiency, basically trying to replicate what some of the what people today, they call hypermiling, trying to drive as efficiently as possible. Mm-hmm. But the other factor that plays into that as well is when you're not in control of the vehicle, when you're just riding in the vehicle,
yep.
you're typically much more sensitive to motion sickness. And so one of the ways that engineers are trying to get around that is by trying to make the control of the autonomous vehicle as smooth as possible so you don't feel like you're being jerked around and you're less susceptible mm-hmm. to that motion sickness. But that also feeds into the overall efficiency of the vehicle, which means that you can go farther with less battery and it helps adjust the costs. So all of these things kind of build on each other to make the overall ecosystem more efficient. And then you have – hopefully less traffic congestion as a result of people not having to park their vehicles on the road if they're not individually owned. Those vehicles are constantly in motion, picking up and dropping off passengers or cargo or whatever it might be.
Here's a question from Mary. Mary writes to us. She says, I own a Toyota Prius Hybrid. I also own a Ford 150 pickup truck, of course. I use the Prius to commute to work and the F-150 for farm use. I would love a hybrid truck that could do the farm work. When is that going to happen? Sam?
2019, Ford is launching a hybrid version of the F-150. Actually, GM launched hybrid versions of its pickup of its full-size pickups back in 2007, but they were kind of expensive at the time and came just as the financial meltdown was happening, and they never sold very well. But Ford's developing a new hybrid system specifically for the F-150, and it'll also be used in the Mustang starting in 2020. So it's about two years away.
Wow. Pickup trucks, Mustangs. Mike Dunn, you're in California this week. That's a long way from China. What are you doing there with your auto focus, China auto focus?
Growing up in Detroit, I understood that there was one center for cars, and that was Detroit, the Motor City. Things have changed. There are now at least two here in the United States, the second one being Silicon Valley. Tesla, Google with an autonomous, which will be electric, and potentially Apple as well. There's real activity here in Silicon Valley as it relates to electric and autonomous vehicle technologies. And the Chinese are aware of this, and they have begun investing billions of dollars in Silicon Valley to design, develop their own first-class electric vehicles that resemble Teslas. That's wow. why I'm here. Big money pouring into California to say, hey, R&D in California, produce and sell in China. This will be a winning formula.
Who's going to own the electric vehicle industry? Or will it be a nation? I guess it hasn't been. Germany's done fine. Others have done fine along with the U.S. What's the distribution likely to look like, Mike?
Let's look out, say, 2025. Most of the production will happen in China. Of course, the United States, Japan, and Germany will still be founts of cutting-edge mm-hmm. technology as it relates to electrics and autonomous. So there will be an uneasy balance between the technology sources, California, Germany, Japan, and the market, China.
Wow. Mike in Hudson, Massachusetts. Mike, our time is short, but you're on the air.
Hi, Tom and guests. My concerns are the oil companies have a stranglehold on our government. They wield a lot of power and a lot of money. Now this current administration wants to offer subsidies for coal companies as well as nuclear companies. I just don't see us winning that battle. It'll come down to who writes the biggest check to your senator to wrestle control over our health.
Mike, let us pick it up right there, if you would. Sam, well, could the oil companies still step in here and, put a brake on Detroit competing in the electric vehicle realm?
I mean, they will certainly try, but you know, as Mike and the rest of the guests have said, you know, China and Europe are really the ones driving this, and you know, I think they have somewhat less sway over there. So you know, the Chinese market and the fact that all of the big manufacturers are, you know, operating globally, you know, in all regions, will drive them to develop and build these cars anyway, regardless of what the oil companies want.
Boy, history moves. Sam, what about heating and cooling an electric vehicle? Do they work in, I mean, that's a big, you know, we get a lot of heat off of an internal combustion engine. That's made heating cars very easy in cold climates. What about electric vehicles?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a challenge that engineers are working on. You know, as you mentioned, you know, the internal combustion engine generates a lot of waste heat that can easily be used to heat the cabin of a car. And you don't have that with an electric vehicle. So they're, you know, they have to use other mechanisms to heat and cool the vehicle that you know, draw down on the range of the battery. But, you know, manufacturers are increasingly using technologies like heat pumps that are much more efficient than the traditional resistive heating systems, so that it won't slash your range by half, you know, when you're driving on a cold winter morning.
Electric. Mike, is the old vroom vroom going to be old-fashioned horse and buggy stuff?
It's looking that way.
It's amazing.
That's right.
It's amazing. Well, things do change, and GM and Ford saying they are in the game this week. China pushing hard, Europe pushing hard. We'll see where the U.S. goes. This has been really interesting, and we are grateful to the two of you for joining us. Michael Dunn, president of Dunn Automotive, Hong Kong-based consulting research firm focusing on China and its automotive industry. Mike in San Diego this week, thanks very much for being with us.
Pleasure to be with you.
And Sam Abwelsamid at Navigant Research out of Detroit Motor City. Electric soon, I guess. Sam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Pleasure to join you, Tom.
Happy driving one way or another, listeners. Thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.